Be seated, please. Brother Travis.
Good evening. Glad you could be back with us once again. I'm going to jump up your Bibles to James chapter 3 while I talk a couple of things, a little household cleaning things that we got going on. I wanted to speak about Amanda who and her decision to be baptized this morning, how neat and how precious that was. She has just been a delight ever since she showed up, and you can ask her a little bit of her backstory, how she came to via Spokane to get to here. But we never actually, I approached her about a month and a half ago to sit down to have a study, and it just never quite worked out. She was working crazy hours. She's got a handful and a half of a five-year-old boy who's just a neat little, mom calls him a replica Travis. He's a handful, but he's neat. And so she's been working crazy and then taking care of him. So we never actually got to sit down and study. We met a couple of times and we chatted, and she described herself as, I think, hot mess. But I thought, as we told her story, I thought, well, there's nothing too crazy in there that I haven't heard or seen or even lived. And so it's just, when it's personal, it means like no one else can go through it, right? And so it was just really neat to see her. And so she's just been reading her Bible crazy and crazy. She writes down all these questions that she has from Paul and my sermons. And so apparently there's more questions than there are notes. I don't know if we're doing our job than Paul, but she just has great little things. So I was so proud of her and her decision. And then another thing, on Wednesday, if you come to Wednesday Bible class, we meet before Chick-fil-A. We are canceling that this Wednesday. It's Valentine's Day, and Chick-fil-A is doing their a daddy-daughter thing, so they've already booked out their whole restaurant. And then I thought about moving it, and then I thought, well, it's Valentine's Day, so anywhere you go, there's probably going to be people. So we're going to cancel that. So you've opened up your Bibles to James chapter 3, and you've looked at the heading, and you talked, and you see taming the tongue. Tonight will be the most difficult thing that you can do. Taming the tongue. Where are you going to even look in the scriptures? And James is going to say that it's impossible to even do. So I want to look at really two parts. I want to look at tonight just the power of the tongue, the dangers of the tongue, and then we're going to look at, okay, how do we not quite tame it, but how do we get closer and closer to kind of breaking it? And we'll use that kind of that phrasing, like you'd break a horse or you'd break a dog. If it's kind of its will to do its own thing all the time and kind of listen to some commands. Me and Amy have had the pleasure to have two puppies. And they're getting a little bit older, and they're 9 months, and they're starting to recognize some things that, hey, if I do this, there's some discipline, there's a punishment, and if I listen, hey, I get a treat, and that's kind of nice. And so we've kind of had to slowly break them of their puppiness, is what I'll describe it as, but really their selfishness that we're just going to do what we want to do. And so we're going to look at James chapter 3, verses 1 through 12. I just described this as, and this kind of titled this as, how to hold your tongue, although you never really truly get there. So we've looked at James chapter 3, but we got to start completely somewhere else. We got to turn to Matthew chapter 12 and look at what Jesus says about the tongue and about taming that. I mean, most of what we should do starts with Jesus. So we look at what he says here. Now, he's talking about the Pharisees and of all of the troubles that he has to deal with them, and constant their hearts that they're not in the right place. They're more of a checklist Christian. Said, well, I gave my tithes, I did this thing, I followed the old commandments, but you never did anything truly with your heart. And we read in Matthew chapter 12 and verse 34, he says, out of the abundance of the heart, so out of your heart, the mouth speaks. So we need to hold on to this little thing here and use it as kind of our basis for the next two sermons. That so out of the abundance, so what comes out of your heart, that's how your tongue speaks. So when we look at the kind of the illustrations, the examples that James is going to use here, we need to realize that we're not actually going to, or we're talking to the tongue, right? You know, you're not going to actually cut out your tongue because you said something, or you realize, well, if I can't tame it, I'm just going to cut it out. Well, you really, that's just a vessel. It's just a mouthpiece, right? And it's literally where your tongue is. It's in your mouth. It's the mouthpiece for the heart. So a lot of what we're going to do, it's going to stem from our attitudes, our spirit, and really our heart. So Jesus is saying here, it says, Hey, what you guys do and what you speak and what you say, that's what's deep down in your heart. And you got to take kind of aware of that. So let's go over back to the book of James, but let's go to chapter 1. So this isn't the first time that James is addressing this idea of taming the tongue or controlling your tongue. He'll start out in chapter 1 really dealing with kind of trials and persevering under trials and how our attitude is towards trials, how we're to maneuver our way around them, what's the result of that. And then he goes into a little bit more of how our faith is kind of reliant on him and how we're to go to him. And then he comes down towards the end and he starts talking about this idea of bridling the tongue. And so let's look at that. He says in James chapter 1 and in verse 26, he says, "And if anyone thinks himself to be religious, yet does not bridle his tongue, deceives his own heart, and this man's religion is worthless." Said, if you can't control your mouth, if you don't put a bridle on your tongue, none of what you've done in your religion that you've done, all the checklist items that you've done have meant nothing. Well, you start thinking about it. Well, what's a bridle? And so I don't know horses. I've not been around horses all that much. So I had to go to the Google and I had to go to the Google images and I started looking at that. So what we look at here on the left and on the right, I'll be on my right, your left. You're just looking at the bridle of a horse, and so it's just kind of this thing that they put over their face to just control what they're, where they're going to go, right? I thought, I can understand that. Later in James chapter 3, he's going to mention how you put in its mouth a bit. Now, this is part right here where it goes in the horse's mouth. There's been certain times, I think, where you can literally pull the horse any kind of way. I was thinking... when I grab the dogs by the back of their head or I grab them by the scruff of their neck because one of our dogs, Australian Shepherd, has all this fluff and it doesn't hurt her. If I were to just pull her, I could just take her anywhere. And she just kind of has to go. And so that's kind of with the horse. And I was thinking my parents probably have thought about this idea. So that's why I didn't give this sermon until now. I'm out of the home. That you could put this on a thing. I remember when I was a child at the zoo, Mom, what was the little wristband with the kind of, I don't know, just little string and you can carry your kid around? You know, you've seen those, right? I remember being attached to those several times. And that's kind of that same idea that, hey, you're not going to go too far. You're not going to pet all the animals or you're not going to climb on everything or put something in your mouth you're not supposed to. You can guide it. And so that's exactly what James is using here. It says you need to put one of those on your tongue, but really on your heart. And so you can kind of see through that. If you go through the book of Psalms and through the book of Proverbs, you'll constantly and you'll come up repeatedly on phrases from David and Solomon about how we are to control our mouth because it's the most difficult thing we will try to do. In Psalms 39 and verse 1, the psalmist says, "I said, I will guard my ways that I may not sin with my tongue, that I will guard my mouth as with a muzzle while the wicked are in my presence." So kind of that same thing that like the bridle, you're putting a guard on it so you can control it whatever way it goes. Like when someone cuts you off in traffic or is tailgating you. Or my favorite thing when we're driving is when you're in the right lane, there's two lanes, you're in the right lane and there's a guy in the left lane and you're at a red light and it goes green and you start going, and the other guy starts going, and he starts speeding faster than you and cuts in front of you to turn right. So you have to then slow down. It drives me absolutely crazy that I have a few choice words for people like that. And so what you do is you want to say something, or you want to honk your horn, or roll down your window, or I've been guilty of it, where I've done something like that because you're in a hurry and you really need to get to that right, where someone shows me a digit on their hand, and so they're just kind of replaying what they've got. And so he says you need to put that guide that when that something happens like that, you can control yourself and you don't get mad and you don't say something you probably regret, and your kids are in the back seat going, "Whoa, what did Dad just say?" or "What did Mom just say?" He says, "I put a guard on that." In Psalms 140 in verse 3, it says, "Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth, and keep a watch over the door of my lips." So So do you want to open up that door? He says, just put a guard there. So let's open up our Bibles back over to James chapter 3. And let's look at what James says here in probably the first 9 verses, what we'll get to. And then we'll finish off the rest in our next sermon. He says in verse 1, not many of you should become teachers, my brethren, for you know that we will teach, who will teach will be judged with a greater strictness. You think, okay, what is that? What does that mean? And why would James start there? And why would you introduce that? Because James's little section here, like with elders or deacons, we're not all elders and deacons, right? So when we look at the qualifications and we study the qualifications, and think, well, I can just kind of go to sleep during Paul's sermon and 1 Timothy and Titus and say, hey, that doesn't apply to me. I don't need to listen to that. I don't ever have a desire to be an elder or to be a deacon. So there's nothing I can learn there. Well, no, there is something you can learn. Maybe those qualities that are there are probably good qualities to have just as a Christian, right? So there's something to glean from the words that are in there, although you'll never have that office. So what James is going to do here is he's going to talk about the responsibility and really the power that is in teaching. And he's going to use that to kind of use it how to bridle your tongue. And so we're going to look at this, and maybe you'll never be a teacher, or you'll never strive to be a teacher. You don't ever want to be a teacher because you'll look at the responsibility that's in that and you realize, I don't want to do that. But really, in all areas, in every kind of way, you're going to use your mouth, right? Unless you decide to become a mime and just start kind of acting your words there, that you're going to use your voice and you're going to want to speak and you want to be heard. So he starts out with this, and he's kind of warning teachers about this. And he says, let not many of you become teachers. Teachers back in this time, especially Jews, they desired the office of being a rabbi or a public instructor. And they really carried this fondness throughout the whole church. It was a well-respected position. You were probably one who was very popular, that you would have had many followers, or you could have been able to teach many things. Well, Apostle Paul's going to talk about this into Timothy. Turn with me to 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 6. You can desire to be a teacher. Anybody can want to be a teacher. But the thing that comes with teaching, and then what you need is you need to have knowledge. You got to be able to speak on the topic. That's why this point right here made me a little scared about giving this sermon, is being a teacher and being someone to speak. Do you have the knowledge that's there? And have you put in the time and the work, and you're not really just searching for the glory? There's a beautiful thing that Scott Beyer, Bill Downey, that gave to me and a few others, that it was Letters to Young Preachers. It's a little book from the FCU you can get. And the first chapter, can't remember the preacher that wrote it. He says, you cannot be a teacher / preacher if you're in it for the glory. And it just hammers home that point that it's not for you. You're not up here to look good. You're not up here for necessarily a paycheck. You're up here to teach and admonish and to pass on some good things. And so Paul's going to address to Timothy, who was an evangelist of himself, that same thing. For it says, for some men, in verse 6, strain from these things, have turned aside to fruitless discussion, wanting to be teachers of the law, even though they do not understand either what they are saying or the matters about which they make confident assertions. They said, yeah, they want to be teachers, they want the limelight, they want the glory, but they have no idea, A, about the subject, and then B, even what the subject is. They come into the middle of a conversation and just start talking, and it doesn't make any sense. And so they have no knowledge. So he says, a small number of well-qualified teachers will do more good than many unqualified yet ambitious teachers. And so we have a lot of, I started thinking about all the teachers of the young people classes, or the teachers that we have on the Sunday morning, like Rocky and Jim and Dad and all the people and Paul that have stepped up, and Bart that have stepped up and started to teach classes, and they've taken that role seriously, and they've done it with their studies and their knowledge. And so he says, be aware of this, because it's dangerous, because when you get up there to teach, what do you use? What do you use to teach? Your tongue, your mouth, and your heart. So be weary of that, because you're going to incur a stricter judgment. So then he jumps in to James chapter 3 and verse 2, all of what we're very familiar with. He says, for we all stumble in many ways. And if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, also able to bridle his whole body. So let's take that just kind of in pieces. He says, for we all stumble in many ways. So really, we're all apt to commit error, to make a mistake, right? We see many other applications at Ecclesiastes 7:20. There's not a righteous man on earth who continually does good and who never sins. And in 1 John 1:8 and 9, if we say that we have no sin, we are deceiving ourselves and the truth is not in us. So we all make mistakes. Paul, I'm going to put you on the spot here. You ever make a mistake or say something wrong when you're up here preaching or teaching?
Once in a while.
Once in a while. It happens, right? Just like when we're out there living our lives or in our marriage or with our children or children to our parents or any kind of thing, you're going to make a mistake. You're going to sin. And so he says that, okay, we've made the idea that you're going to have a stricter judgment, but that doesn't mean that person's going to be perfect. And so we need to be patient and willing to be hearers of that person and to take the role seriously. Because how easy is it, and I just come up with a list of things, how easy is it to have a wrong thought? I have them all the time. How easy, especially for a little child who's in trouble, to not be honest. Said, I didn't do it. That was my sister or my brother. To have lukewarmness in your faith, in your religion, to be selfish, to be lacking in faith, to break a traffic law. How easy is that? When I'm late for when I got to preach, I'm pretty sure I do that quite a bit. The speed limit odometer kind of starts to get a little blurry, right, when you get there. And you're not sure if that's at 35, the speed limit, or 45. And so you think about that, or your unthankfulness, or inhospitable, or not forgiving, and we touched on that. It's really easy, right? It's easy to do that, and we tend to have all these excuses for these things. Well, I had a reason, but when a preacher or teacher makes a mistake, we got to attack them like it's the last thing we're going to do. So we all stumble in many ways, and he continues on. It says, and if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, that the word is telios, which is mature. We'll look at that in a second. Able to bridle the whole body as well. So if this man can tame his tongue, he can tame everything else. He's got his eyes, his nose, his legs. He's got all of the parts, his brain. He's got all of it kind of taken together. In Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 19, it says, where there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. We've all slipped up. We've all said something. It may not be even a cuss word. I think that's the number one thing. When we think about our tongue, we think about, okay, well, I don't ever swear, and I never swear. I remember in high school, I swore like a sailor, and I've listened to those types of things. And afterwards, you swear all the time. But what we're talking about is even just a slip of a tongue to hurt somebody. And it may not even be intentional. I know I've said a few things where I thought I was in the right, and I wasn't being mean, that Amy took as being hurtful or not right. And she came up to me and said, hey, that kind of hurt, or that was embarrassing, or why did you say that? And I was like, I didn't even mean that. But then when I went and looked back, I thought, oh, I see what you mean. That was mean. That was messed up on my part, and I'm sorry. And so it may not even be something we're aware of, but where there are many words, transgression isn't unavoidable. And so that could be in there. It could be hurt folks by mistake. Could be to discourage the weak. You may not even be aware of it. Discourage the weak, mislead into error, divide the saints, or just be emboldened to sin. And there's so many things. So this is where we need to stop. This is where we need to pause, and we need to look at kind of where our Christian growth is. Where are you on this chart? Where are you kind of in your faith? Because we kind of got to make a decision. If we're going to be on the fence, this is anything else that James is going to say is not going to be worthwhile. If you're kind of on the fence, if you're going back and forth, nothing is going to, there's no point. So if you want to look and you want to continue to grow, you want to continue to look at what James says and take this kind of seriously, and you want to start applying this, this is where we look at that. And really, that's what James is saying here. It says, well, if we want to be perfect, we want it to continue to grow. And that word telios is just mature. One who is has growth in moral character, complete. So just a word of completeness. It's kind of like this. In Matthew chapter 4 and verse 48, he says, Jesus says on the Sermon on the Mount to the people, you are to be perfect. Jesus is telling the people to be perfect, and though we know over and over again throughout the scriptures that we aren't going to be perfect, as your heavenly Father is perfect. Think, now we have the standard, so we're going to be perfect like God, like Jesus. I mean, that's unattainable, that's crazy. And so what Jesus is saying here, be complete. Be looking out for others. Be nice to enemies. Do these certain things. Continue to grow. And so now he gets into really the heart of it. And this will go first. He says in verse 3, he's going to give us really four illustrations. They're kind of quick illustrations. And then we'll get to the end and about how really dangerous the tongue is. He says in verse 3, if you read with me, 3 and 4. So now if we put the bits into the horse's mouth and we see what the bits are, so that they will obey us, we will direct the entire body as well. So just that little tiny thing you put in a horse's mouth, right? It can control the whole horse as you're riding the horse. And then in verse 4, it says, look at the ships also. They are so great and driven by strong winds, are still directed by a very small rudder and engine, wherever the inclination of the pilot desires. So what do you think about that? Small things are directing really big things, right? Just little tiny things are controlling these big. I've always appreciated the look of horses. And whenever you see one in person, especially some that are like racing horses, and they're out there getting that work, and you see their legs and see how powerful them and how much they can carry. And I even saw videos of, what are the ones in New York? Those Clydesdales that carry those people around, and they're just how powerful and strong they look. And it just takes this little thing in their mouth to control them. Or like a big ship. You ever seen those? Bill Downey was on a ship with Miranda because she's in the Navy, and he got to go on and do one of those behind the scenes kind of thing. And I'm thinking how huge those engines must be to pilot something so big. And even just seeing those pictures, it's even smaller than I thought. And so just this huge thing being directed by just a big thing, that these things can all be tameable, right? It's kind of what we're seeing. And then he goes into verse 6 and he says, and the tongue is a fire, the very world of iniquity. And the tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life and is set on fire by hell. He says, all these things, gossip, profanity, complaining, and Wayne Counts delivered a beautiful lesson on complaining just a couple weeks ago that I needed in my own life, especially this time of year when I'm always complaining about the weather. And I realized, man, most of the time throughout the year, they want that kind of weather. So I thought, Wade, I'll make a trade with you. We'll send it down, and then you come back. And we complain about these things, and it kind of can ruin our own salvation. It was just really neat that even our complaining with our words or bragging, look how great my life is, misrepresenting and doing things, saying things about someone that's not true, or maybe even just, how about this one? This one kind of hits home, a broken promise. I think especially nowadays we use the word promise more than we ever should. Think about how important, how crushing that is when you break a promise or hinting at betrayal. Well, we can see that this kind of all accumulates into Colossians chapter 4 and in verse 6. Turn with me there. We're going to look more at this verse in the next lesson and what are the things that we need to do. What are the specifics on how we to tame our tongue? Now that we've kind of addressed how dangerous it can be, it says in Colossians chapter 4 and in verse 6, kind of before his final greetings, he says, let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer each person. I just see my first kind of gleams is someone who thinks before they speak, right? Someone who's kind of takes that second moment to breathe. And you don't have to be the first one to answer, to let your mind kind of process. And I did a social media sermon a few months back, and kind of that same idea, maybe reread what you're going to send, think about what you're sending before you actually press send. Maybe do the same thing with our brain. Think about that a few times, especially in a serious or a deep conversation or with someone who's hurting. Think about it. for a few minutes and then kind of go on from that. And then he goes on into James chapter 3 and in verse 7. He says, "For every species of beasts and birds, of reptiles and creatures of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by the human race." And I started thinking about this. I started thinking some of the more scarier animals that are out there. I'm not a huge fan of snakes. And by fan, I tell a story that I was out hiking with a buddy. I was armed because we were kind of in cougar territory, and you don't want to mess with a cougar. And I told Jordan that, hey, cougars are, I'll be all right, but if we see a snake, I don't care, a little garden snake, I might pull and fire. I mean, I have no consciousness when it comes to snakes. And we came across a snake, and out came my 45, and I put a couple holes in the ground, and he realized, oh, Travis is serious. And so I think about that. Even those have been tamed, or your kind of fear of sharks or elephants, or Amy's mom is ostriches. I don't understand that one, but she has a fear of them. I find that more cute than scary, but even all these things. So you think about even these great animals have been tamed, just kind of another proof of that terrible power the tongue has, right? That all these types of animals, all these types of things, fire and horses and boats by just a small engine can be tamed, but the tongue cannot. So he says here in verse 8, and he gets down to really the heart of it and how it's really how you should be scared. I don't try to scare people, but James is going to scare you here. He says in verse 8, "But no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison." I know, remember as a kid, when someone would make fun of you, you would say a little song back to them or say a little phrase, "Well, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt you." Biggest lie kids can ever tell. You may say that, that's fine, you may believe it, but there's something or probably someone who could say something that could hurt you. And he says here, the tongue, really the heart, is what can do it. And it may be your loved ones, your best friend, could be just a stranger, could be whatever it may be, but it's restless evil, and it's full of just deadly poison, especially when it's someone who knows you well, who knows all the deep, dark secrets or the things that you really genuinely care about or are afraid to know, or that being put out there could hurt you deeply. And that's what the tongue is. You can't tame it. Wow, that's a huge and scary thought. So what we need to do is, and we're going to look at the next time, is try to, how do we control it? How do we get it more kind of on our side? Because there's no cunning persuasion, influence that has ever been able to silence other than a few things. And we'll look at that kind of the grace of God and really the power of forgiveness. Really kind of the other thing is just by cutting it out. And really what we mean, we're cutting our own heart out. I found a kind of a, I don't know how to describe this illustration. It was kind of eerie. It was very scary to me. And I haven't found out if it's truth or not, if it was just someone put it out there to scare somebody or scare kids or to scare me, that may be why it's there. But in this kind of this old language, this old tongue, it says, the illustration says, "On a windswept hill in an English country churchyard stands a drab gray slate tombstone. And the fate etchings read on this tombstone, 'Beneath this stone, a lump of clay lies Arabella Young, who on the 24th of May began to hold her tongue.' Below that it said, 'Arabella Young passed away the 24th of May, 1959. You think, well, what's the other way we can tame our tongue? It was by passing away and moving on. So unless you're apt to ready to cut your tongue out and really cut your heart out or move on from this earth and just give up your life, I don't recommend you do that unless it's God has called you home. That's the only way we can bring it into subjection. So what we need to do is realize what we say, what we speak, and what we have in our mouth and our heart is dangerous, but also very beautiful. And that's why I want to look at next week is that. So we want to kind of echo what the psalmist said, "Keep watch over the door of my lips." So kind of coming down to the last verse in our last 3 minutes, it says, James 3:9, "With it we bless our Lord and Father." So with our tongue, we sing praises and we kind of give beautiful prayers and we do these beautiful things. But also with it, we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. And so a lot of times when we hurt people with our tongue, it's our brothers, it's our sisters, as all these things. And we tend to make excuses. And we're going to look at those excuses and look by why we do those things and how we do maybe change our focus and change our mind. So that's been my sermon this morning. I hope it's been a benefit, that it can be a reminder this week that maybe we should watch what we say when we're driving or when we're talking, especially with people that you're not familiar with, because that could be the one thing, and I've done it, where I've said the one wrong thing that has closed the door for the rest of my life. I'm hoping that eventually someone will talk to this person, but I've said the wrong thing, and I've ruined being able to speak to them about being a Christian because I said the wrong thing, because I messed up. And it grieves me even till today. So maybe we can be reminded of that. And so if there are any here that have been living the wrong life, that haven't been doing the right thing, that either need the prayers or need classes or need something, that just need help, that's what the invitation for. And we'd love for you to answer that invitation as we come forward and stand and sing our invitation song.